it's not agenda. If you can hear me, or rather, if you can't hear me, please indicate from where you're seated, and I'll try and raise my voice. Now,
so I was going to suggest if they can't hear you, they should sit closer.
Okay. First, just an agenda matter. You have the agenda before you, and the briefing of the state liability amendment bill is item 4. The person doing the presenting is Mr. Labuschagne, a gentleman with a red tie, seated next to Mr. Bassett. Mr. Labuschagne is an old friend of the city. And he is not well today. And so my request to you is that you bring item 4, which is the briefing on the state liability amendment, forward.
Yes.
So that once it's done, we can release this Labuschagne so that he can either take his child off to a doctor or hospital. With your permission, can we agree to that? All right. The second item is apologies. I have not received any apologies myself. No. Honourable members, are you aware of any members who should be here and perhaps or elsewhere? I'm told that Mr. Koos van Merwe is all sick. So if that can please be noted. All right. That deals with apologies. Honourable Member Swart.
I don't have an agenda here. We don't have the agenda.
We don't know what you're referring to.
My apologies. Mr. Rudman, let me welcome you and your other impressive team. And I'll ask you to introduce all of them to the committee, and then ask Mr. Labuschagne to take us through the vote.
Oh, yes, thank you, Chairperson. Thank you very much. Yes, we have a strong team here. Today, but the reason for that is because we are dealing with 5 bills this morning. You will recall, Chair, that you requested us to give you a briefing on the bills that have received the attention of this committee. The idea being indicating to the new committee exactly what it is that the previous committee has done, where we stand with those bills, how far we came, and what the issues are. So we thought it appropriate to bring people in our branch that work with these bills to bring them with, so that they can respond to questions if there are questions. On my left is Lawrence Bassett. You all know him. Johan Labuschagne, who you also introduced earlier. Sarel is our person responsible for the harassment bill. Engela Stein next to him. She is dealing with the trafficking in persons bill. Then we have Henk, the PIP bill, and Teresa Ross. She is responsible for the customary law, or the traditional courts bill. Those are the people, Chair, but with your permission then, we would like to then give you a briefing on the state liability amendment bill, as you indicated.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. Labuschagne, let me just say one or two words before you begin. I'm now going to address our committee researchers and everyone else attached to the committee. Please, whenever we're dealing with a bill that is amending an existing law, can you ensure that the Principal Act is also tabled for committee members at the same time that the bill is tabled? It's quite frustrating, I know, over the years, to come to a committee, receive a bill, and we find that it's actually amending an act of Parliament, and we don't have it in front of us. I have gone to the trouble of getting copies of the State Liability Act and asking Mr. Mandela to dish them out. And then we'll know what Mr. Lovestackle is talking about when he returns to certain parts of the Municipal Act.
Section 3 of the State Liability present provides that no execution or attachment may be processed, or life process may be issued against the state or property of the state. Then the Constitutional Court in June 2008 in the RT1 case declared the following part of the case Section 3 unconstitutional because it does not provide for an execution process against the state. What the department then did was to, or we at that stage deemed it necessary to draft a whole new State Liability Act to give effect to the Constitutional Court's order in the RT1 case, firstly, and to address practical problems that I've experienced. I also thought that an accompanying constitution amendment bill is necessary. So we also drafted what's called the Constitution 18th Amendment Bill. Those two bills were published in the Government Gazette in June 2009. We received very extensive and critical comments on the two bills from 26 commentators, criticizing the bills and indicating that all that actually is necessary to give effect to the Constitutional Court's order in the RT1 case is to amend Section 3 of the State Liability Act. The order of suspension in the RT1 case was suspended for a period of 12 months in order to give Parliament time to promote the necessary legislation. The Minister of Justice realized, in view of the complexity of the matter, that it will not be possible to make the Constitutional Court's deadline. He then applied to the court for an extension, which the court then gave, and it extended its order of unconstitutionality till the 31st of August 2011, which means that this state liability bill will have to be passed by Parliament and implemented before 31st of August 2011. That is basically the background, Jefferson. I'm also going to touch on the context of the bill itself. The bill before the committee seeks to give effect to the Constitutional Court's judgment in the RT1 case and the court's order in the RT2 case. That was where the court further extended the period of suspension. Was one of the bill insert or substitute section section 2 basically only an expression in that section due to a whole new definition clause that has been inserted and which contains then a definition of executive authority. Clause 2 substitutes section 3 of the Act, and that is here the crux of this bill. Subclause 1 provides that no execution, attachment, or right process may be issued against the state or against any property of the state, except if a final court order sounding in money against the state has not been satisfied. Only in those instances may an attachment and execution against property of the state issued. Once the court has given a judgment against the state, then the state attorney or the attorney of record must inform the executive authority, others, the minister and the accounting officer, which is normally the DG of the department concerned. Such an order serving money must be satisfied within 30 days after the judgment. The accounting officer of the department concerned must within 30 days after the judgment make sure that the judgment creditor has been paid. If an order against the state for payment of money is not satisfied within that period, or the department has not made acceptable arrangements with the judgment creditor, then the creditor may apply for writ of execution or warrant of execution against the movable property of the state. Against the state and used by the department concerned. Except property which would disrupt service delivery, threaten life or put the security of public at risk. The sheriff must then, once such a writ or warrant has been issued, may attach property but may not at that stage remove the property of the state. Any party having a direct or material interest in such a case may then apply to the court which granted the order for a stay on grounds that the execution of the attached movable property is not in the interest of justice. If there is no such an application, then the sheriff may remove the property which he or she has attached and may then sell that property in execution of the judgment day. So in other words, what happens, court gives judgment, the department is informed, the department must pay within 30 days of the judgment. If the department does not pay, the creditor may apply for execution against property of the state, except property which we try to exclude. The sheriff, once the court has given such an execution order, the sheriff may go to the department and attach property, but may at that stage not remove the property. In order to allow the department or any other party to show to the court that the attachment of that property is not in the interest of justice. If there is no such an application, then the sheriff may remove the property which he or she has attached and may sell that property. So that is basically the process that we try to create in order to ensure that state or government departments comply with orders selling money. And maybe another important thing which I forgot to mention is that this provision is only applicable to national and provincial departments, not to municipalities. Only national and provincial. For sports jettison, inserts a new section in the Act containing definitions which are necessary in view of the long new section 3 that we propose. That section contains many expressions which we feel need to be defined. And jettison, that is basically what the bill seeks to do. And I just then want to emphasize that the deadline is 31 August. Thank you, Chairman.
All right. Let's see. First, Mr. James Lamioni, followed by Mr. Swart, followed by Mr. Jeffrey, followed by Dean Smart, followed by Sheila Shobastole, followed by Dean Shepard.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, my question is just to find out whether is it sufficient just to say if the judgment is not satisfied within 30 days, without perhaps mentioning unless the state, for example, has noted an appeal or whatever process has been taking place. You know, I'm asking this question in view of the fact that maybe where the judgment has been granted, the accounting officer has been informed, but there are some process taking place, but then you find an unnecessary attachment taking place for a person who has read the Act as it says that within 30 days this can be done. Thank you, Chairman.
Mr. Lobstadt, let's take a few questions and then you can answer them. Is that okay with you?
Chair, thank you. And we know the background of this matter and of the non-compliance of civil judgments given in favour of litigants against the state, which is a big concern that this committee has wrestled with and Parliament has wrestled with. The proposed way forward now, I would need to know, you said there were a number of people that were quite critical, and I see the memorandum says that those criticisms have been accommodated where appropriate. I'd like to know which ones have not been accommodated and what they stated. I don't think, have we got any submissions? We haven't received any submissions in the past on this bill. Maybe we need to look at those. That's the first general question. Then more specifically, if one then looks at how we understand there are budgetary constraints, but that's no reason to not pay judgment debts. If we now look at the test that has been given, state attorney 7 days must inform the cabinet minister plus the DG. Then there must be payment within 30 days unless there's an appeal. If not, then movable property can be attached unless the test is it will severely disrupt service delivery, threaten life, or put the security of the public at risk. You've got three distinctions there. Who decides that? Does the state? The state can say, well, this is going to, the attachment of this desk in this municipality is going to severely disrupt service delivery, therefore we don't condone this or we don't allow this attachment. And then the creditor, the judgment creditor, is back at square one. Or put the security of the public at risk. Now we know the police are there's litigation continually against the police, and there are judgments against the police, and they can say, well, the attachment of this desk in this police station puts the public at risk, the security of the public, therefore we cannot allow it to be attached. So I'm just concerned about the abuse of the process in certain, and we need to address that. Then the last question is sub 7. Who then, a party having a direct material interest, is that the state? The state can again then say, well, we've got an interest in this, we believe, and apply to the court to stay the execution and make out the case on the interest of justice, although there's been a judgment against it. Can the state then apply again, or is that another party? Thank you, Chair.
Did I say Chair,
Jim? No.
I'd like to respond to I'll be brief. I mean, if memory serves, those objections were mainly against the previous draft and its accompanying constitutional amendment, and I was one of the people who complained bitterly, but it's perfect, not by way of submission. And it seems to me that you have verbatim taken over the Nyati 2 judgment. Therefore, I think it's a very neat solution, but it'll be interesting to hear what the, I'm sure the same amici that appeared before the court will have a view for us here. But it's verbatim Nyati 2, isn't it?
Would you prefer to respond to those few questions and
then
we'll take the others after that?
Thank you, Chairperson. As far as Mr. Sibani's question is concerned, clause 3A provides for a 30 days on this and appeal has been noted. So that matter has been covered. Can you see it? This is what I'm doing. Okay. Mr. Swart, Ms. Smuts is correct. The whole state liability rule that was published in 2009 had, I think, about 26 clauses, and it also did not provide for an execution process. It was only paid, and then, as I said, the most people said, but all we have to do is, we don't need that comprehensive new act. All that needs to be done is to read section 3, to provide for the execution and the attachment process. So I don't think that comments is at all relevant for purpose of this bill. As far as the exclusion process is concerned, I don't think we should give a judgment creditor a carte blanche that he can also an order for attachment of any state property. I mean, for example, an ambulance, police vehicle. And surely, I don't think a judgment creditor would expect that. But simple things that they can attach is, for example, coffee machines. But those kind of things. Because nobody can prove that that is necessary. So, personally, the department feels that there must be some sort of limitation on the kind of profit. Do you agree?
Yeah.
And then, this is what your last question. That's Section 7, yes, the idea is that the state can go to the court and prove to the court, but this property that has been attached, the selling of that property is not in the interest of the state. So we feel that we have to give the state an opportunity to prove to the court, but don't attach this property. That's rather that problem. So,
sorry, Chairman,
I think Mr. Swart's question is who decides? That is the key issue. Yeah.
The shell decide. And that's why we give the state the opportunity to go back to the court and say, but listen, the shell attached this vehicle. We as department need that vehicle not for specific purposes, and therefore please also said to attach other property. That's how I see my mind how it will work in practice. But we can discuss that once the committee starts to discuss the bill.
Mr. Rani.
Yeah, perhaps just to add on to what Johanna said, it is correct what he says about the bill that was published to comment. It was a very, very comprehensive bill dealing with a lot of issues relating to actions against the state. And then the constitutional amendment was deemed necessary because of the provisions that we had in the new state liability bill. And as Johanna has indicated, we did not really provide for an execution process. And that was the basis of the comments that we received. Everybody said that you're not complying with the judgment in the Nyati. And eventually, sort of, we had to agree. They were quite correct. And the subsequent orders in the Nyati showed us that we couldn't get away without having an execution process. We tried to create other processes in terms of which the judgment debt could be complied with, or the amount could be paid, by bringing in national treasury, by bringing in everybody, and creating offences if it's not paid for. But we eventually had to take that decision that we need to comply fully with the judgment in the argument. And that is why, as Ms. Smuts has indicated, it really follows the court order. And I think, Johan, the only difference is the three exceptions that we created, in terms of which property cannot be executed against if it complies with those three exceptions. And we did a bit of comparative studies, and other countries do the same. A different wording, perhaps, but they do exactly the same. They say in their legislation you can attach state property, but in certain cases you cannot. That property that is required for service delivery and for that particular department to perform its functions, as Johan had said, you can't attach a police vehicle, but you can attach some of the other things. You can't attach all the computers in the school, but you can attach some other things that might be...
A ministerial motor car, for example.
A bus, or whatever, but you can't take the computers. And yes, eventually it will be the court that decides. But it is a discretion built in there, and eventually the court will decide. The same as provision we have in Subclause 7, where actually apply to the court. The court will then decide whether this person has a direct interest, and it need not necessarily be a government department. It can be somebody else. That as long as that person can prove that he or she has a direct or a material interest, then he can apply.
Just a very brief follow-up, and that is, I fully appreciate the situation of ambulances and police vans, but my concern is we've already got an abuse of where civil judgments are not complied with. And it seems that in many litigation that there's delaying tactics are used. And I think we're going to have to grapple with the fact, will sub 7 not be used again as a delaying tactic to prevent the execution? So it's easy. All you do is you just bring an application to court and you delay it further and incur even more costs. Now, we know the RAF, for example, is clogging the courts because they only consider a matter at the point of litigation. So I think that's something we're going to have to grapple with. We've got to strike the balance. How do we prevent further delay and further incurring of costs to avoid execution steps? And just in general, that's something we're going to have to do. Because does this not open... I mean, this severely disrupts service delivery. Anyone can say, well, the attachment of my desk here severely, in my opinion, therefore we apply to state execution. You want to try to execute it? Well, we'll show you now. We're going to stop it. And the potential for abuse, I think, is something that we're going to have to strike the right balance with. Thank you, Chief.
Perhaps just mention that the penalty, of course, in cases and applications of this nature will be cost orders against the state. If it's
that doesn't help already. It should be costs against that particular attorney, maybe.
Chair, thanks. It's not working. Two issues basically. One is that they're not working at all. Two issues basically. One, procedure. It's good that we've finally got the bill, but we've got a little bit of a challenge time-wise to pass it by the 31st of August, when we have got to pass a budget, and we've also got to have local government elections. And passing it means NCOP and then president to assent. So I think we need to start working out a program quite quickly for the bill to be advertised for public comment. It's a pity that hasn't been done in fact already, so that we can get moving. So that's the first thing. But we need to move on that. Then as far as the contents, I think as far as preparation, it would be important to have the two Inyati judgments, the interim order that they referred to, so we're able to prepare. But then maybe the specific questions, and I think we shouldn't be debating too much now, because that's still coming along down the line, but just some specific questions. Mr. Lovoskowski might have covered it. What is the state? Okay. Who does the bill apply to? I couldn't see a definition of state in either the principal act or the amendment bill. I don't know if it includes organs of state. But who does this bill apply to, number one? Number two, maybe you want to just fill us in a little bit on the debates around whether the role of Treasury, which is not in the bill, you know, should the notification of Treasury or the Minister of Finance, and the issue of criminal sanction against accounting officers.
Very good.
Because just following on, I mean, it's a debate, and as I said, I don't want to get into the debate, but following on the previous discussion, costs orders, punitive costs against the state is not really hurting anyone. So, I mean, for my mind, one, I would like you to look at the issue around criminal sanction against accounting officers. So maybe you said that was one of the debates that you've taken out, but it would be useful to be filled in on some of the issues.
I was just wondering, I don't think when the extension day is finalized. I think I was quite wise, but I felt a little bit relieved when you excluded the municipalities. And my guess is that you are considering the fact that there might not be efficiency to deal with this matter at the level of municipalities. But I'm a bit worried about the provinces, whether you should also not think a little bit deeper about the possibility of lack of efficiency in servicing things quite quickly in the province. Because as we stand, there is that possibility that the province might be a need of your sympathy.
Some of us may not agree with you, and Mr. Lovoskowski, you also be aware that a lot of these issues being raised are actually issues for the committee to decide upon. But if you feel competent to respond, please. Mr. Shoka.
Thank you, Chair. I have similar concerns to Mr. Swart, but I mean, I understand it's taken from this judgment, but surely we don't have to be bound to only the judgment if we can see problems now. Obviously we can't do less than what the judgment requires. But surely the intention of doing a new bill is to make it effective. Now, I mean, I agree that you've got certain limitations on what kind of stuff can be attached. But if you're putting that limitation on in subsection 4, then what is the point of having 7? And surely, I mean, I share the concern for abuse of the system, because the state will just go every time and say it's not in the interest of justice, and you know, who decides on what that? So I fully agree with him on that score, and I think, you know, we need to try and look at the intention of what to remedy the harsh effects on litigants. Now, you don't give states, you know, private institutions and private companies the right to do this kind of thing, so why are you giving it to the state? And why can it not be removed? If you're already excluding the certain types of property from being attached for those reasons, which are good reasons, then why can it not be removed, you know, without an application? Why can you not just remove like you normally do? Because it is going to be a delaying tactic over and over again. I can see it coming. And secondly, I would also just like an explanation. I know I am new on the committee and I don't always have all the background of this bill, but why are municipalities excluded exactly? Because I can see from some angle that you know, why it could be so. but I think they also have the potential for abuse of the system. I mean, I know people who have to pay a huge amount of rates and they don't get interest on the money and so on and so forth. Now, surely they should have some remedy as well. Thanks.
Okay, Chairperson, as far as municipalities are concerned, the Constitutional Court after the Minister applied for an extension in the Yardley 2 case. Okay, an order containing an attachment and execution kind of process, which included national and provincial departments and municipalities. The court then gave directions that my minister and the Minister of Finance must sort of indicate by means of an affidavit why the court shouldn't make that, let's call it interim order or proposed order, should not make it a final order. We then filed affidavits, before that there was a hearing, and then when the court gave its final order, the court excluded municipalities. So the court, I think, realized that there is a problem. And I think it's the Systems Act, I just need to go and make sure. The Systems Act already provides for execution and attachment against municipalities. But I say that now subject to correction. So I think that's... So it wasn't the department who decided to exclude municipalities. We gave effect to the court's order, or the court's judgment.
Can I just add to the municipalities issue, the Chair? And one must just tell me, help me from... We had municipalities in the bill that was published in the Government Gazette. I think we tried to cater for municipalities as well, but there were objections on the basis of there already being legislation in place dealing with municipalities. And I think that's what Johan is saying as well. But we will get that for you. We will bring the legislation dealing with municipalities.
Okay. Changes. As far as criminal sanctions are concerned, look, the accounting officer, when he or she pays the debt, will have to act in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, PFMA. And that act, again, subject to correction, I think provides for sanctions when an accounting officer does not comply with it, because that act also has time frames for paying accounts. And if he or she does not comply, I'm sure there is then sanctions that will be applicable to that accounting officer. I can go back and do some research just to make sure that the PFMA does cover sanctions.
I think without misrepresenting Mr. Jeffrey, I think what he's looking for, you see, the sanction here applies to the primary accounting officer not carrying out the court's order. Whereas the PFMA deals with a slightly separate issue, but Mr. Jeffrey, maybe you want to add.
Yeah, Chair, I think the issue was that it was raised, I think Mr. Lavascafni had raised with Mr. Rudman that the issue was looked at. Okay. So I was wanting to know what were some of the debates, why was it left out? I mean, I think the context was used was would have been too complicated, but I may be putting the wrong words into your mouth. But the issue was, as I understand it from you, is that it was looked at. So I was then hence asking what were the debates around it. But I think it's something that there would be interest in from the committee. I mean, just from the noises from the members when I raised them yourself, Chair. So I think it would be useful to know what are the what would the criminal sanction be in terms of the PFMA? But really, I think the ultimate question we're looking at is, sure, the PFMA may provide for it, but is it not going to be simpler for everybody to concerned? That rather than having to wade through the PFMA and find out, okay, well, this is actually criminal conduct, the fact that in clause clause 3B, the accounting officer, the department shall make payments within the time period specified. But if that doesn't happen, why don't we make it simpler and provide for penalties? That's the question, really. But I think, really, in short, what I was after, I mean, and maybe not now if you're not prepared for it, if this was something that was looked at before, what were some of the debates that went around it, and why was it decided to exclude it? The only reason we've been given now is that it's too complicated, if I've understood it correctly. So that, and then two, what are the criminal provisions in terms of the PFMA which would apply to an accounting officer who ignores a court order to pay? This contempt of court, I mean, that's not PFMA, that's basically, and anyway, contempt of court, you've got to go back to court and get contempt of court. And contempt of court is not actually criminal sanction so much as a civil remedy. I mean, I suppose it is, but you get the person locked up for being in contempt of court in the civil case. There's no criminal case that follows. And then I think we would be interested in considering whether there is a specific criminal sanction for failure to pay. I mean, and that's just a one single thing rather than the multiplicity of provisions in the PFMA and things that the accounting officers have to do.
So just on that, I don't want to labour the point, but the PFMA does set out a whole range of responsibilities and duties of accounting officers, and I'm sure it is covered there, and it's grossly negligent or willful non-compliance which would land the accounting officer in hot water. But we will come back.
Alright. And Jeff, so my question about the state.
Oh yes, who is the state?
Well, at the present, for the present section 3, also referred to state without any definition. What we've done is, as I mentioned, we limit this process of execution and attachment only to national and provincial departments. And that is clear from the proposed new section 3, subsection 2. It indicates the state attorney must inform the department against whom an order sounding in money has been granted. And the department is defined as meaning a national provincial department. State, even in the existing act, is state not defined? So
is state not?
Not defined.
The 1957 Act. So before we fooled around with stuff like all this stuff.
But we can then, once the committee starts to debate, we can then look at it. Do we actually need the definition of state in this law? We can look at it. And I can even discuss with the state law advisor. We can from our side also come up with informal views, because eventually the committee must decide.
All right. Yeah, I mean, can I just respond? I mean, look, I think my difficulty with the way the bill is worded is that it's sort of, I mean, the Act is the State Liability Act. Clause 1 is claims against the state. Any claim against the state which would, if the claim had arisen, be blah, blah. So it's state. And then as you read the bill, you discover it's provincial and national departments. So it's rather I would have thought one needed to be more upfront. But anyway, that's something we will need to debate and come back to.
Sure.
And where do state-owned entities fit in?
Yeah.
No. Sure. May I suggest the gentleman look at section 238 of the Constitution? It's the one that describes executive board of trustees.
Okay.
All right, you'll come back with that. Chair, there was the question from Honourable Jeffrey about the involvement of National Treasury and the role of National Treasury. In the bill that was published for comment, we created a comprehensive role for the National Treasury. And the reason for that was to try to get away from the execution process. That was the process that we created in terms of the bill that was published. We thought that that would be sufficient. But when we decided that that would not be sufficient and we decided on the execution process, we felt it not necessary for National Treasury to have a bigger role. In fact, we consulted with them on numerous occasions. We had a number of meetings with National Treasury, and they also felt that they should not have a role to play in this matter. And that is why the bill has been drafted as is.
I'm not surprised they didn't want a role, but whether they should have a role or not is something we need to look at.
All right. Honourable Ms.
I just have two questions. Suppose the application for Sherman is granted, what is the further remedy for the defendant now, because there will be already a court order? And then, can you hear me?
Sorry, I couldn't.
Okay.
The other question.
I want to know, suppose the application in for Sherman is granted, okay, in the interest of justice, what is now the further remedy for the defendant, because there would now already be an existing court order? And suppose it's also not granted, where in the whole process, based on this clause, I think, or section 3, where does the processing continue?
Yes. Sorry, I'm not understanding.
If there's an application in the interest of justice, and that application is granted, okay, what is the remedy then now for the defendant? Because there's already an existing court order that says you are supposed to get your money. Okay. Now there's an application in the interest of justice that says yes, in fact, that whole execution process must be stayed. So I want to know, what is the remedy then for the defendant? Then on the other side, suppose the application was not granted. Okay, so in other words, the execution must continue. Where in the whole process is it going to continue now? Is it going to be another 30 days? Is it going to be a 7-day period? Or can another person also apply again in the interest of justice for the stay of the execution?
To answer the second question first, sub-clause 6 provides that the sheriff attached but may not remove. Then there's a 30-day period for the department to sort of appeal against the attachment. If there is no appeal, then the sheriff must remove. If there is an appeal and the appeal is unsuccessful, then the sheriff must remove. If the appeal is successful, then I think from a practical point of view, then the sheriff will have to go back and attach other property. So I don't think it will be necessary for the defendant to sort of reopen the whole case.
So are you saying that in the application, the department or whoever is the interested party basically is going to say, you don't want this specific property to be attached, but you rather advise that X property must be attached.
That can also.
There's not going to be a limited just in the sense of an application for the stay of the execution. Because the court is only going to grant what you're asking the court. And if you ask the court for the stay of execution of X property, but you do not advise that Y property can be attached, then obviously the court is only going to, in the interest of justice, grant the order that X property should not be attached. So then it automatically leaves the defendant with a lacuna, because what then? That was basically my question.
Yeah, I understand. I think Johan is correct, Chair. It will all depend on on what the application deals with, and then the order of the court. Obviously, if the application is not granted, then the execution process will continue.
When? The 7-day period or 30-day period?
Yeah, that, you know, I think immediately. I mean, because I think that by that time the 30-day period is, would have been, would have lapsed and would have passed. So I think it will then happen immediately. The question probably is what happens if the court grants the order?
Yes.
And what is the situation is then? I think we'll have to think about that one and have a look. I'm not quite sure.
Okay, but also another thing. Suppose it wasn't granted, okay, and the execution is now supposed to take place immediately, within immediately is within 4 hours or whatever. Doesn't this provision also leave a space open for another interested party to also do the same application?
Yes, it does.
And how are we going to stop that then?
Well, once again, I think right at the beginning I said the person that applies in terms of 7 must show to the court that he or she has a direct or material interest. And if that person has a direct or material interest, then obviously that can happen. And that person can apply. But that person must have a direct and material interest.
Yes, now, are we not working on the assumption that there's only one party with a direct
No, I don't think we can work on that assumption. I think a private individual could have a direct or material interest on property belonging to the state that is attached. And that person can have a direct or material interest and then can go to court. But it's still a question of whether the court will be satisfied that that person has that interest.
Just on that note, maybe we could think about putting something in along the lines of they can make the application to court not to attach that specific property, but in that same application, there must be an alternative proposal. So we don't have to say no, refuse it, then go to court on appeal, then come back again. Maybe we could look at that as well.
Is there a dual processing? Because at the moment you've got the situation where you've got a magistrate, a sheriff can attach but not remove, and at that point you can bring an application if you're an interested person, like a hired purchase. Now, is this a second bite of the cherry? You've got that that's in terms of the magistrate's court and rules or the Supreme Court act and rules. Now you've got an additional bite of the cherry, or is it? Maybe you can have a look at that, whether there's, you know, our concern is the delaying process in terms of giving them, now sub 7 gives a further option to that person that doesn't succeed at the point of the magistrate's attachment, but then can now use this provision to bring us another application.
We will just have a look at that.
All right. I have no doubt there will be more questions as we deal with this problem. I'd like us now to look at, assuming that it's also about questions, to look at the issue of the deadline that has been set for us, whether we should advertise only for written submissions or comments, and the only question of public hearings, which is unnecessary. But of course, at all times, please bear in mind you've got 31 August 2011. Firstly, come a little back, you have assent to the bill by the President. Come a little back, and you've got the NCOP process. So when you address the question of written submissions and public hearings, please have that in front of you.
Chair, I would be correct to recognize that I mean, it is in our judgment and discretion. We ask for the written, we absolutely must. But we may then decide that we don't need oral argument on all of them or any of them or whatever.
Okay.
No, I mean, not getting onto a point, but I mean, from the Doctors for Life, I mean, it basically was if somebody wants to do oral, then that would be unfortunately for the opportunity, unfortunately, because they might. But anyway, but I think the issue would be we call for submissions, and we will consider having oral hearings if it's an interest. All right. So we won't automatically. Maybe by some stroke of luck, people will say we.
You hope.
Yeah.
It will. All right. Is there anyone with an opposing view? If not, then can we accept that that's the unanimous view of the committee, and that we then instruct the committee section to do what is necessary? The standard period we give for submissions is 2 weeks, 14 days, that include weekends. All right. So that'll be 14 days from the time the advert flies in the orange. Okay. Are we agreed with that?
Agreed. Yeah.
Great. And then, depending on what submissions we receive, we will decide on the question of
public. Yes. So just on that, I just noted on the department's bodies consulted. If we, I don't know if anybody's asked it already. The bill was published in the Gazette for public comment. The comments we received were accommodated where appropriate. Can we get a report on those comments? Not now, later. Yeah.
Sorry, those are the comments that we received on the comprehensive bill.
The 18th and the other stuff.
And for example, the comments that we have accommodated, Mr. Jeffrey, is that we didn't perceive that, but we only amend section 3. No, but that was most of the commentators made that point.
We just left out a number of provisions as a result of the comments. But really, the comments are there. If you want to see it, you're welcome to see it.
No, I'm getting intimidated by.
I've never known that you worry.
Retracting, I'm backfitting. What would be useful would be, though, can we just get a list of the organizations or individuals who made comments? So we've got a sense of who's out there who's interested in the comment. I didn't understand that the commentary was on the earlier version that is not before us.
Okay.
So it's no point getting detail of that comment, but at least let's know who are the people, organizations that are interested in the topic.
Okay.
And maybe, Chair, sorry, just because 2 weeks is quite short, maybe they could be approached for further comment. Just in terms of speeding it up. I'm just worried that we may end up with, if people haven't seen the bill before because it hasn't been out, we may want to extend it for 3 weeks. I know we've got time pressures, but 2 weeks is short. You know, where a bill has been in the public domain for a long time, then it's fine to say 2 weeks. But where it hasn't been, and this one unfortunately hasn't been, the topic has been, but not this bill.
All right, let's address that. Do you want to extend the deadline for submissions to 3 weeks?
Not particularly. I think it makes sense to approach the organisations that have made a submission before. I said you want to comment on the third, and it's not necessary to extend.
Mr. Bradman, can you assist us to ensure that we can do this?
Sorry, is the request that we distribute the list to you?
Yes.
We will do so.
We will distribute it amongst the members so that the members then can look at it and decide who from the list we can formally ask to
comment. So we'll send the list to the secretary tomorrow.
Yes. What I was thinking was that the secretary could just send it out to those organizations that have made comments and just say there's a new version, here you go. If you wish to comment further, you have to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that suit you?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Fine.
Great. All right. Okay. Is there anything else on state liability?
Okay.
No. If not, Mr. Lovisari, thank you.
Thank you.
Get well soon.
Happy to go better.
Okay. State liability.
according to our program for today, we should now receive progress reports on the bills before the committee. Mr. Swart has a particular interest in, did you say?
Trafficking.
Yes. Trafficking. And he's requested that be dealt with first. Would that be possible, Mr. Brandon?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Ms. Stein to take me through the report. The reports are in varying lengths. Some of them are longer than others, and the trafficking is a bit longer. The status report on the trafficking bill is a bit longer, purely because there have been quite intensive deliberations on clauses 1 to 16, and that deals with the issues raised, and I think it's just a reminder of what the committee has asked the department to do. But we will be guided by the committee how much detail you want us to go into when it gets to the issues raised. But I, with your permission, can I hand over to Ms. Stone?
No, just a little bit unsure what we're doing in that state liability. We had the report because it's been introduced. We haven't come across it all before. Now we're getting a report from the department about bills that are before us.
Yes,
that we're working on. I mean, I would have thought it would have been better if that would have been done by the research section. Of Parliament, because it's with Parliament. But nevertheless, I mean, look, I've looked at the report on trafficking. It's very thorough. It's very useful.
Okay.
But the difficulty is, it's not. We're being reported to about
something
we're doing.
We are doing.
Okay.
So I think it's a useful report in terms of a recap. But I don't know how much detail we need to go into, because it's basically the report is the substance of the bill and the issues that are before us. So I'm just not sure what the intention was.
Well, I think the intention was really close out this issue now. We can't keep saying we close it before us. Because at some stage, someone is going to say, okay, and now what? Where do you go from here? So then, all right, let me ask Mr. Bassett to step back and put the question to the committee.
Chair, can I just assist the minister?
Yes?
Chair, I agree with JJ that the bill is before us. I just, from my side, would like us to prioritize it as much as possible and get it finalized. There's a lot of pressure from various groupings to finalize it, but we do understand there's a lot of complex issues relating to the victims. But we have our international obligations in terms of the Palermo Protocol to finalise it. I just do not want it to put on the back burner. But I do see that there's some interesting aspects here. For example, when we last met, we wanted an input from the International Organisation for Migration. We also wanted an input from the United Nations Office. And we gave certain, the department was given certain tasks to do as well, which they are now reporting back as well. So, for example, on page 9C, there's meetings have taken place with the department and SAPS as to who's going to, for example, transport children. That those aspects had to be cleared. So there are some points that are useful to report back to us on meetings that have been taking place and further meetings. But as far as the legislative drafting, we don't need to go through all that. Maybe you can just report back on what is taking place in the meantime. Meetings with sectors of society that had to of government that had to come back to us and say, well, who's going to do that aspect? And there are some useful reports there. We can keep it short.
And also statistics.
We also
wanted statistics from
SAC
and so on.
Yeah.
Mr. Jeffrey?
Yeah, I mean, look, the report sets out the issues that we've got to resolve. I mean, it's I can understand it would be a bit difficult for them to summarize it. I mean, for example, carrier, what the committee wanted and a proposal for consideration by the committee has been inserted into the department's working draft of the bill. So that's all there. I think there are two, one could probably categorize the issues into two sets. One where there are drafts, texts that are before us that we've got to make a decision on. The other category would be areas where further information is required. And there, I think, I don't know if I understood Mr. Swart wrongly or not, but I mean, any further, I don't think the department should be going off meeting with people. The bill is before us, we get the reports. Okay? Unmediated. Okay, so if we say we want to know from health, you know, for example, removal of body parts. The committee requests the department to obtain the views of the Department of Health. Inputs of the department are awaited. Those views must come to us, and if there's engagement with them, it must be with us. So I think that's a category of where further information is needed. Mr. Swart's named some, and I think Ms. Schaefer's identified some of the areas. It was also of the understanding, I haven't found it yet in the bill, that we had also asked the NPA whether sections of the criminal law that could be tightened as far as securing a conviction in a trafficking case, certain aspects relating to leading evidence, the crime itself, that kind of thing. But I think it would be useful to have a list of those areas where further input is required. And I think to stress that whilst the department is being asked to go out and get that input must come to us. So we're not expecting any meetings, as far as I can recall, between the officials and other people, and a report being brought to us. We're requesting information.
Chair, that I agree. The meetings were between departments, as you referred to, the Department of Social Development, SAPS, and Justice, as to who should transport children, for example, and to clarify that aspect, not with outside bodies, but that is just a clarity. And there is reference in the document to meetings that took place on the 7th, yesterday, and on the 3rd of February, interdepartmental, not necessarily with outside, but that will take the process forward. Thank you, Chair.
All right. And once that's agreed to between the department, then we'll put it into the bill. Am I correct?
We'll consider that proposal. We'll get the report.
Okay. All right, Mr. Bassett. The committee is saying in the report that before us speaks for itself. What we do need, however, is further clarity of those meetings that may have taken place between SAPS and NPA, yourselves and Social Development, and yourselves and the Department of Health, if they took place. So I'm not sure if now you're in a position to respond to those.
Chair, yes, I think we are largely in a position to respond to those. I had the sense that we were to meet with our colleagues in the other departments with a view, because the committee had expressed certain reservations or made certain suggestions, and those suggestions would have to be clarified with our colleagues in the other departments with a view to us possibly coming back with amendments in our working draft to try and assist the committee. We can give feedback on the meetings that we have had, and I can ask Ms. Fang to do that. I think there was one further meeting since this document was finalised, which you can report back on. But then I think there is really only one department that we haven't had feedback on, and that's the Department of Health. I speak under correction there, but we can certainly give feedback on those aspects, or you might want us to bring those departments at your request when we come and discuss the working draft of the bill, that we've already had an opportunity to try and factor in your suggestions, the committee's suggestions and requests, but to have the departments here when we report back on the bill itself. That's just a suggestion, but I'm in your hands, Chair.
Let's get your feedback now, and then later when you're ready with your working draft, we'll have those departments here as well. Okay. So that gives them sufficient notice
to ensure that they appear before us.
And then just to what Mr. Jeffrey was saying is quite correct. You know, there were specific, I think one of the major issues in the bill that we need to try and resolve is the definition of trafficking, the offence of trafficking. We were asked to have a look at other countries' legislation, and Kenya was a good example that we were requested to look at quite carefully and to get an input from the NPA on those specific aspects. So we've had, as a department, we've had a look at all these things and we've worked them into our working document. But the report does say, and I think it's, as you've already indicated, it's going to be extremely important for the NPA to come back and give their input, which I understand they're busy preparing on the very crux of the proposed legislation being the definition of trafficking and the offence of trafficking. But can I ask Ms. Stone then to just report back only on the meetings, and we won't go into all the details. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I must start with the meeting that we had yesterday morning. It was a very brief meeting between the Department of Social Development and the South African Police Service with regard to some issues regarding the referral of victims to either child protection organizations or to accredited organizations in the instance where the victims are adults. It was, as I said, very brief, and what we decided actually is that we as a department must go back and draft some proposals that were agreed upon between the South African Police and Social Development, and to get their views on a document. Social Development's views are in short that they regard the transportation of a victim from the police station to the organization or to a shelter as the responsibility of the police. The problem being that there are risks involved in human trafficking, and they were threatened and they are being threatened while being transported, or the people, the traffickers find out where they are. The police, on the other hand, found that they don't have the resources to do the transportation. So the preliminary option that they are going to look at is that Social Development will look at negotiating with other organizations to have more, because at this point in time there are only 13 shelters countrywide which can accommodate victims of trafficking. They will look at engaging with the accredited organizations to see where they can accommodate more victims that will be closer to the station. But where they can't, we could look at provisions to keep the victims of trafficking where there are risks, for instance, in protective custody. So there are a few things that we could look at, but as I've said, we need to go back and draft some proposals, and then we can again discuss it with you. We also had a meeting with the Department of Home Affairs with regard to whether we should look at granting refugee status instead of a visitor's permit. Their preliminary views are that they prefer refugee status because there's already a system in place that could be used, and there are more benefits attached to a position of that of a refugee. But they also asked us for the opportunity to go back to the offices that work with refugees to obtain the visas. We also had a brief meeting with the Department of Labor. They indicated we had to discuss with them our proposed definition of forced labor, and whether there should be a definition rather in the Basic Conditions of Employment Act. they couldn't really give us an answer why there isn't a definition. They're relying on the definition as in the labor convention. But they also indicated that they would go back to see whether it would be better to have a definition of forced labor in the basic conditions of employment act. I brief note yesterday morning just before I left from the Department of Health. I must say that there are some questions that I would rather like to ask them just to clarify some of the answers that I received. So I don't think it's going to be worthwhile to repeat the reply that I got here. And I think that is it.
Thank you.
If I may also just mention, and perhaps it isn't my call, we have had some successful meetings with some departments. We've had problems or challenges with others, and I think we're going to have to continue our engagement with them to assist the committee members, but bearing in mind that they must come and report back here as well. But I mentioned at the beginning that we only got up to clause 16, so we've still got to deliberate the remainder of the bill, and I foresee that there's going to be questions for other four departments once the committee has deliberated on those provisions as well, and I'm sure we're going to have to go back to the departments that we have been already engaging with. I just want to perhaps make the point that those deliberations are going to also lead to further engagements with the departments in question.
Mr. Jeffrey, followed by Mr. Swan.
Yeah, Chair, I mean, I think to some extent, Mr. Bassett's covered what I was going to say. I mean, if you look at page 3, clause 1748 still have to be dealt with. So the way forward is we need to have a meeting to continue. I mean, that's over half the bill we haven't gone through clause by clause. We need to have a meeting to do that. Then I think it would be useful that if there were a list drawn up of the outstanding so far, and more will be added. I mean, remember we've got less than halfway through the bill. The issues where further input is required, so we can see that. And particularly, I mean, if you look down at the next paragraph, the committee expressed disappointment at the lack of synchronized statistics between various departments and indicated it would like to be briefed by the International Organization for Migration in this regard. That meeting, I don't know if that's up to the department to organize or the committee, the staff, the secretary. I suspect it's more the secretary that needs to be scheduled in. But I think really it's a matter of let's have meetings scheduled to go through the rest of the bill. Let's look at where we let's get maybe a single page on the outstanding issues where input is required so far. And definitely that page will probably double when we go through the rest of the bill. We can take it from there. But I think also just the there's a lot of pressure for this bill, so I get the sense, I mean, yes, it has been Christmas, yes, we haven't finished with it, we may be going back to departments for more stuff, but I get the sense that the other departments not necessarily being that speedy over it. But I think it's not fair to accuse them, because we haven't come with a completed list of issues.
Okay. Yeah. That's it, Jim. I'm in agreement with that, that we start working through it. The pressure is there. There's an international watch list that South Africa's on as well, and we're in danger of losing the status that we've got on that watch list. Our president gave certain undertakings as well that it would be finalized, but I think we can't cast any aspersions on others. We need to get the work done. So I'm in agreement with the JJ's approach. Thank you, Chair.
I take it then that we agree that the International Organization of Migration is advised to come in business.
Jim, there's also the United Nations office that was attending certain meetings and wanted to brief us as well. Remember that?
Yeah.
There's a specific UN office as well in Pretoria, UNDPP or something that was also wanted to brief us. That we expressed interest in hearing their views.
All right. So that's two organizations. then we'll start scheduling meetings of the committee to look seriously at the rest of the bill as well. I think we must start doing that. You will appreciate the fact that I've just come in.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, let's do that. Okay. Other than that, what else is there on traffic? Honourable members? All right. For now, that's it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll invite IOM and the relevant United Nations office. And then we'll finish up our agenda. So that's trafficking for now. What are we left with?
Chair, there are three more bills. It's the stalking bill, protection from harassment bill, there's a traditional courts bill, and then the protection of personal information bill, where we've given status reports in. They are much more brief, shorter than the trafficking bill. And really, and I'm not talking about the DPI bill, but the other two are short in the because we really, as a committee, we haven't started that. There haven't been deliberations on the clauses, on the provisions, as there were in respect of the trafficking bill. You might, Mr. Ross, can you give us an update on the traditional courts bill, and Mr. Robertson can talk to the protection of from harassment bill. And I understand Mr. Jeffrey is going to get a report back on the PPI bill.
You ready with PPI?
Yeah, the only thing that worries me is the report was done by the person who did the report. I mean, I'll present it, but he's not here. Is Henk coming back or not?
Well, maybe we should do the other two, and once he's returned, ask you.
Okay, if it's possible, as soon as he comes,
yeah.
We can.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we begin with Harrison again, okay. And then move on to the traditional courts? We need PPI for us.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask Mr. Robertson to take us through the...
Please, Mr. Robertson. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I believe last time in the parliamentary process, we discussed the comments that we received on the bill. We tried to discuss the more contentious issues raised in the comment. And certain suggestions were made in the committee how to deal with certain issues. I believe the first issue was in the idea the problem relating to probably suppression of media freedom. And so the department were requested in the idea consider the presentations by Uguza and also the English Protection from Harassment Act. We have done that, and we can report back on that. We also made a draft to incorporate that in a working document as possible amendments to the bill. Must I discuss it in full, or can we do that at a later stage when we deliberate on it?
Later stage.
So similar with there was a suggestion that we amend the definition of harassment and try to provide for sexual harassment and also for culpability. Question was raised if it was appropriate to use the act as a medium or the bill as a medium to amend other acts. I think that's also something that needs to be discussed at the later stage. And I believe a further suggestion was made that we must look at the process in the bill. And we deal with the entire idea of cyber stalking, where third party information needs to be furnished to the court to deal with the application for the protection of the harassment order, since the ADA notified the third party that certain is information is in the public domain. And this is kind of bells and praises, I think, as requested by the Honourable Mr. Jeffrey. We've also requested to again look at our redraft relating to cyber stalking. I think Ms. Schaefer requested that we look at independent corroboration of allegations of cyber stalking. That has been done. We haven't drafted a clause that gives effect to that. And then I believe we also requested Natalia to draft a clause that deals with tracing of persons whose identity is unknown in Italia by the South African police. I can actually report back that we have initial discussions with the South African police regarding this aspect. And we have drafted a clause that gives effect thereto, and we have submitted the clause to the South African Police Service in Italia for their comment on the tracing issue that is outside the cyber stalking applications. Okay, then I believe the committee also raised the question regarding offshore electronic communication service providers. What can be done in Italia to prevent stalking from outside? I believe it was suggested in the committee that a briefing from the portfolio committee responsible for communication matters was actually briefed the committee in that regard. That's mainly all that is done.
Just as a matter of interest, there was an article in the Star I saw yesterday where they apprehended, arrested a person that came here from the UK.
Yes.
Who was, there was a protection order against him under the UK, similar legislation, and he was arrested here. I don't know whether any members saw that. I just mentioned as a matter of interest.
Yeah. I've snipped it out, arranged for. To distribute it. It's quite an interesting case, although there's an added matter. It appears he also came in for a hit matter. That was the excuse he used. I think here it was similar to the Divani matter. I want to interview the hitman, which was all apparently up front. The UK courts had already granted the protection order. It's not like, well, it was more than just a protection order, but that's they actually been found guilty of harassment. But I think once he realized that she was here, does that then stop? Does the application of the UK law end with the
anti-Semitic? Well, I think there might be a problem with enforceability. The law is usually only applicable to a certain country, unless there's something like a bilateral agreement to that effect. So the effect would have been that in South Africa, the UK order would not have been applicable in South Africa.
We'll be keeping an eye on that case, if only because it's something we're dealing with now. Nothing else, Mr. Bassett? Honourable members, no additions from your side? The briefing by the Communications Authority, that's our responsibility. If you see, just repeat the agreement to me, please. Okay. Oh,
not that we would invite ICASA to come and address us on it. And the discussion will be informal or formal? Okay, Ramani is reminding me that it's discussions with the portfolio committee on communications we should have, as opposed to the communications authority. Okay. That's on CyberScope. If there's nothing else on this matter.
Okay. What do we do as far as
protests
is concerned from here?
Well, it becomes part of our
committee structure.
Yes, yes. We know it here, Dan was involved. So, we'll have to look at including it in our agenda. All right. Okay. So, let's deal with that. Traditional
court book. Chair, Mr. Dupre is back, Mr. Jenkins.
Unfortunately, we've now lost Ms. Funtz.
Why is she?
She's on the technical committee.
Is she coming back?
She's left her jacket, so I think she's amazing.
All right, let's deal with traditional court provides. Mr. Dupre, you don't disappear.
Mr. Chair, I cannot promise that, but I'll do my best not to.
We're going to have to handcuff you somewhere here and deal with the consequences later. All right. Traditional courts.
I'm going to ask Ms. Theresa Ross, Chair, if she would take us through the status report.
Thank you, Chair. Supposing we've got a two-page status report that we've distributed, and what specifically contained in that report is what the objective, or rather it contains what the objective of the traditional court build is, which is to provide for the structure and functioning of traditional courts, and to align it with the constitutional imperatives and values. Basically, the bill is intended to replace sections 12 and 20 of the repealed Black Administration Act. The committee will recall that sections 12 and 20, or the operation thereof, has been extended until 30 December 2012, and or to such an earlier date as the bill might be enacted. The bill, the traditional court bill, emanated from a policy document on the traditional justice system that the Justice Department has developed. We have attached to the report two documents, one being the briefing document that we are used when we briefed the committee back in 2008. I'm not sure, Chairperson, if I need maybe to go into that document. But the other document is a report, a draft report rather, that the former committee had prepared on the bill after various discussions that were held on the bill. And because of the due to time constraints and because of the impending elections then, that draft report was never adopted by the committee. But we attached that report to the bill, to the report. The report also chapter contains the, because public hearings were held on the bill. Public hearings were held over 2 days in May 2008, and the report contains also a list of persons and institutions who had made submissions to the bill. So if, you know, taking the cue from the previous reports that were done, if we were ready to talk about meetings, I cannot really say we've had any meetings with other stakeholders or departments. Because what has been happening really from the department side was the availing and preparing reports on the status of the bill and explaining basically what is happening with the bill and the crux in those reports has really been that the bill is before the committee, because when the previous parliament arose, what had happened is that as will be seen in Annexure B, which is a draft report of the previous committee, the committee was moving in the direction of having further consultations on the bill, because amongst others, one of the concerns raised in about the bill was that there was not enough consultation. And from the department side, not knowing what the current committee, because during 2008, the department also briefed the current committee, and we're not certain from the department side what the committee or the direction in which the committee would want to move, especially with that question of further consultations on the bill, because yes, there are issues that were raised in the public hearings that we summarized in a document, and those comments talking to issues such as opting out of the traditional justice system because the bill is premised on territorial jurisdiction, and the concern was that it sort of ties people who do not subscribe to the traditional justice system to the traditional court. And there were also issues on gender and the protection of women as a vulnerable group, and those women participating in traditional courts. There were also issues on appeals and levels of traditional courts. The question being that, or rather on the question of levels, that the bill does not recognize other structures of traditional justice system that takes place in the lower levels before a matter would be heard in the traditional court. And that because the bill itself is pitched at the level of a senior traditional leader. On the issues that were raised in the public hearings, one talking to the forced labor or rather the labor, because the bill, in terms of the bill, the one of the sanctions of the traditional court could be ordering a person whom the court has found to be, you know, I would not say guilty because the traditional justice system does not work on the retributive justice, unlike our formal court that you know, but so the person who has been found to be in the wrong can be ordered to go do some work as some sort of compensation to cleanse the wrong that the one has done. And that has also, concern has been also raised over that issue that could amount to forced labor. But, Chair, that's basically the report. And at this stage, I can say we did not, from the department side, we did not have any instructions from the committee, and that is where we stand.
Alright. The firstly, just a correction, I'm informed that the report was actually adopted by the committee.
I've just heard now as well. Sorry about that, Chair.
All right. So if you could just correct that. All right. Otherwise, that's fine. Just a few questions of my own here to bring me up to speed as your chair. The subcommittee, does it still exist? Doesn't exist or another?
Chair, it was a subcommittee of the committee in the last parliament.
I see.
So obviously when the last parliament
it fell away.
All right.
Okay. Then the further public hearings, honourable members, the committee has to decide on that.
Chair, we've done nothing with the bill since
2009.
This committee, this parliament since 2009 has not done anything with the bill. So effectively, we've got this report. I think the report was more than just adopted by the committee. I think it was adopted by the House.
Yes.
Okay. So it's a report of the last parliament, effectively. That's the one that's attached at the back. And effectively, that is what we've got the bill, we've got that report, which is for information purposes. And we've got to basically get the way forward. And we keep extending, luckily in this case, there's no constitutional court deadline. We set the deadline ourselves, so we keep extending it. And we extended it last year for a while, I think, because we were tired of it. We extended it for 2 years. But this is not going to be, this is also a Section 76 bill.
Yes, I know.
So NCOP will take longer because it will go through provincial hearings and things like that. But we've got to basically address the issue of how do we process it, and the questions of further public participation. Because the other problem with the bill is that I think there's been extensive public input and public debate around the issue. But because that has taken place over a period of 10 years, it's been a while. I mean, the Law Commission, they started, 10 years ago? On the bill. But anyway, it's been in the public domain for ages. The Law Commission, I think, had hearings in different provinces, in different localities. But because it was so long ago, people have forgotten.
Mm.
So they wanted to gain. And I mean, yeah, I mean, in terms of age, maybe some of the people who made submissions in the past have passed on, and maybe some younger people who were children when the bill started have now, you know, become
grandparents.
The Law Commission submitted its report to the department in 2003, January, which means the consultation process took place far earlier than before that date.
Yeah, I appreciate that. My only concern is what are we going to do as a council? And that's really, honourable members, what I'd like to address, how do we process it going forward? Given what you have in
mind. Jim, maybe to suggest that I mean, parties think of it, and because it is a complex thing, and I think it's a question of how do we have public, we've got to have further public input. How do we engage with that? Do we have it at a provincial level? Do we have it in Cape Town? In Cape Town, it's in a sense already been done. I wanted to look at the past records presented to the old committee. But the key thing before was that the extent of the public participation on the ground. And then what happens with the NCOP, because they will have hearings in the provinces. So it's those kinds of questions. But I would suggest that maybe the parties consider it and then further discussion, or they come to you and you come up with a way forward with them.
All right.
Put a very brief idea before you on the way forward. The great work that we will be doing, hopefully this year, I trust, will be on the courts bill. And that's what we're all looking forward to. And there is surely an argument to say that this should be done at the end of that, or as part of the courts package, or maybe towards its end. That is one thought. The other is the following. Is it not possible, is there not a mechanism by which we can ask the NCOP to do this bill first, because they do so much provincial consultation? Presumably this has been introduced in our house, but it must presumably be possible. There must be some mechanism. Ask them to seize themselves first. They have the direct contact with the provinces. And perhaps, then, of course, you would express a view on that. Let them do their part first, and then let it come to us at the end of all that.
That's a good idea. Worth considering. Honourable Sylvania.
Yeah, when you saw my hand doing this, Chief said...
You weren't throwing stuff down.
No. Well, I was saying to myself, I was part of the previous state parliament, but I think
you must use your mic, it's working now.
Okay, but you must take also on the experience of the people who were here before us. We are quite new. You see, it's a second 76 years, and then I was not sure whether at this juncture can we tap on the NCOP, or whether we doing a joint public hearing when the provinces have visited. I understand why I'm saying that. In the last submissions when we did them here in Parliament, the most people who were here were NGOs who were able to come and make their submission. I think we'll be doing wise if we can just expand to say, let's go to the communities. Let us go to the people who say we are still following this tradition and the land, so that they must also have their opportunity to add their views. Thank you.
Anyone else? All right. But I think Mr. Jeffrey's suggestion or proposal makes infinite sense. As well as yours, Honourable Smith. Parties think about it, consult and confer with your principals, and let's see how we can take this forward. Quite clearly, the question of provincial hearings, that has to happen. I don't think you can sit here in Cape Town and process a bill of this nature without hearing the people at grassroots level from that hearing, no doubt. At some point, and here Honourable Holomes, and you'll assist if you feel necessary, would the House of Traditional Leaders and people at Controlesa as well be should we not ask them? I seem to recall the one meeting I chaired in another committee room somewhere here. You won't see it, we must write to them and ask them to make an input.
I mean, he dispenses.
Was that with regard to harassment and Umutwala? Oh, sorry, my memory is failing. But let Honourable Holmes be followed by JJ.
expected to see something.
No, not necessarily.
No, not necessarily yourself, Jay. You know, they haven't said anything. Well, I would support, actually, the two suggestions that the parties must apply their minds and give correction. And secondly, the idea that if it's possible, we have this taken over by the National Council of Provinces, who have the better mechanism, as I understand it, of taking such bills to the people on the ground through the provincial legislature. Of course, we have this professionally that and congeners, it would make sense for them to be specifically invited to make the submission.
How can they not? You run those courts.
Honourable Jeffrey, yeah. Followed by Dr. Davanda.
Yeah, I mean, look, remember one of the requirements for this bill is that the House Constitution Leaders had to, because it's a matter of affecting constitutional matters, when the bill was introduced, they had to, that was in 208 or whenever, they had to make an input. But maybe to say also that the subcommittee that the previous committee in the previous parliament had set up, there's two sides, roughly, or there is a divide between and the previous chairperson, previous chairperson, had invited representatives of the National House and Consulesa on the one hand, together with, I think it was COSATU and women's groups on the other hand, to work with the subcommittee to try and draw them in. And I think that's reflected in the report. But I think the thing would be, I'd again repeat my suggestion and let the parties discuss. Because we've obviously got to, in spite of what Kosi Olomisa says, we've got to perform our functions as ENA. We can't just sort of say, yeah, NCOP, have fun.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. It would serve that traditional courts are distinct from courts contemplated in Section 166 of the Constitution, which fall within the retributive of justice. Now, my question is, would there be any scope in the traditional courts to use the system of precedence? Could the legislators look into that? Because I think with the change of times, that may be relevant.
All right. I must thank you, ma'am. We'll leave it to the political parties in the committee to consider as to the way forward, bearing in mind that there's a strong view that it should be taken over by the NCOP, that they be allowed to do that if there's a way of doing so. I'm sure there is.
No?
Well, maybe by some resolution or something, but we look at that.
We can look at a joint process with them.
Yes.
That the bill is with us, and then we go to them.
And then parties will come back to us as to their views on that. We'll take it from there. Obviously, the House of Traditional Leaders and Professor will have to be consulted. Their name doesn't appear on this list contained in the status report. So that's where we stand for now. That leaves your beloved PIP.
Chair, there's a report then which the department, which Priya had prepared. Basically, it's I think it's relatively straightforward. There were hearings. There's a list under 2-3 of all the bodies that came and made the input. Mm-hmm. The committee then met on a number of occasions. There was a technical committee set up of the Smuts, Dr. Ambrosini and myself. Mr. Fred left off, but I was the convener. And then we had, it's got there three meetings, but I think we might have met over those times, but I mean, I think the 21st of May we met for 2 days, as far as I remember, so the subcommittees also met quite a lot. We basically worked through the bill quite extensively. I'm not sure what number redrafts we're on, I think.
We're on a third redraft.
Third redraft. And then under three, he's got his issues raised, but they're more... just issues raised there, the sort of key issues requiring more policy and political direction. And the one is the issue of the exclusion of information involving national security, defense, and public safety from the operation of the bill. Just raising that issue, there is an overlap between this bill and the protection of what you're now calling it state information bill, and that's an area there may need to be engagement between this committee or the technical committee, but with that ad hoc committee. Then point two is under the exclusion the issue of acts for journalistic purposes by parties, and SANF didn't like it. The full committee had agreed that we would have a further engagement with SANF, and I think there is a meeting scheduled. It's down here as the 10th. I don't think that date is accurate anymore. I think it's the following week. Or maybe Mr. Romano can just brief us on that. But there has been agreement of, although the technical committee is dealing with the matter, that the full committee would have a further engagement with SANF. Basically, the gist of the thing is that this bill is about protecting personal information, setting up a regulator to adjudicate. It doesn't, and it comes up later in the report, it doesn't commit any crimes. It's a sort of reactive bill, as I would put it. So you incorrectly process information. Somebody complains to the regulator says don't do that anymore, and then you're not meant to, and if you do, then you're committing a crime. So it's not intended to cover journalists. That's why the bill provided for an exclusion of journalists who are covered by a code of ethics. But for various reasons, and one could maybe before the meeting with SANF sort of go into more detail, there were concerns raised. And I think the general view was that, look, we don't want this to actually, this has not got anything to do with journalists. But how do we ensure that journalists are excluded, but that other people who we do want to regulate with the bill do not try and creep in will slide in under the guise of the journalistic exclusion. There's a similar provision under the next point of writers and artists. We don't want to be impinging on that, but again, we don't want to allow somebody who is wrongly processing personal information and interfering with people's privacy from trying to claim that as a defense. Then there's the issue of exemption of cabinet, provincial cabinets and municipal councils, and the whole issue of should municipal councils be covered. Then the other key issue is number five. The bill provides for the regulator to take over the functions in terms of the Promotion of Access to Information Act, which are currently performed by the Human Rights Commission. There was also a view from the technical committee, but also it had been discussed in a study group of the majority party of allowing the regulator also to adjudicate in PIA disputes. At the moment with PIA, you request information from a body, government or private. You have it refused, you then appeal. And after that, you then go off to court. And the proposal, it was a proposal from ODAC, was that what about having the regulator adjudicating before people go to court? Because at the moment what is happening a lot is you request information, it gets refused, you appeal, it gets refused, and often there's not a substantial basis for that refusal. So we had also wanted a further engagement with the Human Rights Commission. From an informal engagement, there were a number of aspects of PIA that seemed, PIA, remember, was passed 10 years ago, it seemed no longer practical. So, for example, there's a requirement in PIA that every body, in the legalistic sense, has to submit a hard copy manual. Informally, Human Rights Commission said was, people are not complying with that, but if they did, they would have nowhere to put them, let alone look at them. And because we've moved more into the electronic age, I think the key things in terms of PIA processes is websites where you can access. The idea of the manual was what information is available, who's your information officer, that kind of thing. So we don't want to revisit PIA because that would delay the bill further and require further public hearings and things like that. But were there sections of PIA that we could effectively tweak with, like this requirement of a hard copy manual, to make it less onerous so the regulator didn't get completely overburdened with that. Then the next point was offences. As I said earlier, the bill does not, it's not criminalising processing of information. Setting up this regulator, the regulator then makes decisions, and the criminal sanction, the criminal acts come in if you disobey the regulator's instruction. So as I said, it's a reactive. The technical committee, and I think it had also gone to the full committee, was quite sympathetic to maybe we should create specific crimes. So when it comes, for example, and it was as a result of stuff in consumer columns in the newspaper, mm-hmm. dissemination of people's bank accounts.
That's right.
Yeah, you get phoned, and you don't want the product. But you suddenly found your bank account is being debited even though you never gave it because somebody sold off a database with your bank account. And should we not provide for specific crimes like that? I mean, we don't want unforeseen consequences, but the compilation or the processing of bank account details without authority as a crime, that you don't have to go and complain to the regulator because the damage is done and the regulator says don't do it anymore, but you've made quite a lot of money compiling this database and selling it to a range of people, and okay, it's fine, you won't do it anymore. Whereas it becomes a crime, you get charged immediately. Then number seven is notification fees. It's not in the bill. It's a question of the committee had gone on a study trip, the full committee, to the United Kingdom. It was the former chair, the former whip, who are no longer with us, the committee secretary, the content advisor, did Julian come? Yeah, Julian as well, yeah. And I think the only people that are left are Mr. Sibanyoni, Ms. Smuts, myself, and Prof. Ndabadab was also there, yeah. So there are still members who were there. But basically in Britain, they self-generate by requiring bodies to pay notification fees to the regulator, because this is quite costly in terms of what the regulator has to do. What Henk has written here, my understanding was slightly different. It was more what we were looking at was an empowering provision, so not providing that there will be notification fees, but providing that the minister,
after 3 years,
after a particular period, may start looking at that, because this clause is going to have a considerable opposition, I think, from the private sector. Mm. And then the last section is that there's some dispute with the National Credit Regulator who want to be outside the ambit of the bill. We largely left that up to officials from the department and officials from the Department of Trade and Industry to resolve. I think it would be fair to say that they're deadlocked, and it's something that we would need to bring back at least to the technical committee. But yeah, that's basically it. Maybe one other thing to say is that unfortunately, Chair, as you, I'm sure, will be aware, we're wearing another hat of another committee. that Ms. Smuts and Dr. Ambrosini are part of the ad hoc committee on information, and that meets on Fridays when we've battled effectively. I mean, we haven't met since August because we've battled to find dates in terms of the availability of Ms. Smuts and Dr. Ambrosini with the overlap with that committee. But effectively, those are the issues. And my understanding is that the R meeting scheduled with SANF, for the full committee with SANF and with Human Rights Commission, which Mr. Romano can brief us on the detail. The technical committee then has to go and I think finalize. I had also asked for a meeting of a few hours to be scheduled with the technical committee to recap. But we're quite close, I think, to finalizing the rest of the bill. And the intention at that point was then the technical committee would come and give a detailed report to the full committee. Not something as brief as this, but like maybe two days worth of briefing, because we need to brief you on what were the issues. Ms. Smuts looks very excited, but she needs to be there. And in terms of doing your function, you need it. You know, basically, what were the issues? What were the options that we looked at? Why did we go for this particular amendment? Maybe it wouldn't take 2 days, but we need to do that. So we are quite close. But those are the outstanding issues. I don't know if Henk, if I've left anything out, and Dean, as she's also here through you, Chair.
Mr. Chair, I don't think we have anything to add from the department side. I think that's a very good summary of what has taken place in the committee at this stage.
Let me just add, Chair, that you all owe us.
Oh.
I mean, we sit. The Honourable John Jeffrey is a slave driver of note. When we sit for a meeting, we sit, and I mean literally, for 12 hours at a stretch. And our shorter meeting was 10 hours. And we did this how many times? It's because we can't find time to meet. And it is one of the most tricky, difficult stuff, information law. So you really owe us, you guys.
Sorry, there's one point I forgot, and it's we haven't, it's not in the report because we haven't really got to it yet, but in the hearings, the issue of implementation date came up. It's a little bit similar to the Eureka Inception of Communications, where the industry had not wanted, it wanted more time, and we set a date, and we had to then, as you know, extend that date last year statutorily. So that issue is going to come up here. We haven't really engaged with it. I think the intention was that let's finish the bill, then start engaging the industry as to a reasonable, and get, I think, buy-in into a reasonable period of time in which the bills come into effect. A lot of your multinationals already have these systems in place because they can't operate in the EU without them. So there is a bit of a hype. So a different, the issue of cost of implementation was also raised, which they had different banks, for example, had different positions. But most of those banks are multinationals or subsidiaries of multinationals, so they already should have the systems. But just to indicate, that's another outstanding issue. But when we've completed the bill, I think there needs to be a round of engagement or an opportunity of engagement with the private sector to say, okay, let's agree on a deadline, but get them to buy in so we don't have to do what we've just done.
Okay,
Mr.
Okay, engagement with Senate and engagement with the Human Rights Commission.
Let me say that originally when it agreed upon the dates, you know, it was on the basis that the ad hoc committee on the information field would have completed its evaluation. But you know, I'm told that the deadline has been extended and that committee will be meeting next week. So they were here again saying about that we'll release next week on Tuesday, but then the problem now is that we might have showed in the chairperson is open now for me to. We might have the chairperson able to attend the committee this month if obviously attend the committee. But when I spoke to the secretary of the committee, he informed me that they will not meet on Wednesday. So then what next week? So then the suggestion is that, you know, perhaps this committee then, you know, should meet on Wednesday next week, so they thought that the members who wanted to be on the committee to come to the committee.
And Human Rights Commission?
Human Rights Commission as well, originally was supposed to come straight after, so they were going to be on Wednesday, but, you know, I will try to take the parliamentary program. If time allows, then you can have the two maybe Wednesday if possible, but if not, then you know, I can try to run the program.
You can share this if you like, but I'm extremely frustrated by our committees.
And Mr. Birch keeps calling meetings for justice then.
Yes, I know. I can't, this is now my first responsibility. I can't, if he calls an ad hoc committee and there's a justice committee meeting, well, that's it.
Yeah, and I hope you will convey that to him.
Well, I think it's myself speaking, as they say in the press. Yeah, I mean, what do I do? I just send them a little SMS saying, well, I have a justice portfolio committee that I can't attend. So we would need to speak to the powers that be, that whenever they create, you know, it must be as an absolute last resort that an ad hoc committee is created. That's another very good
question. That dresses my King's Committee, but I'm in
trouble. Yeah. So it's really, it creates enormous difficulties. Yeah. And the reason I've not attended Justice Portfolio Committee is because of this kind of thing. I just, you know, thought that I should make that point. And once we're done with these that are in existence now, we really have to put it across that look. It's just not off. I can't see why matters can't be referred to existing portfolio committees.
Yeah.
I just can't see why not. But be that as it may.
With the exception of intelligence, you don't want classification law to go to the intelligence committee, you know?
No, that's
behind closed doors, that's different. Classified before they even began.
Yes, yeah. That's different. Yeah. Alright. Okay, Punani, then we'll set up the dates for this engagement with the Human Rights Commission. Okay, fine. Just liaise with the committee clerk on this committee, please. And see what we can do. I must thank Mr. Jeffrey and.
One single thing, may I just ask?
Please.
You can rule me out of order if it's not. And it's really to ask both you and Advocate Bassett, perhaps. My colleague, the prisons spokesperson for the DA, advises that. Well, we are obliged to give effect to our secretary status on the Convention Against Torture. And apparently somewhere on your very, very long list, the laws that await, is such a thing. But now what Joe himself wants to do, and is probably doing as we speak in the Correctional Committee, is he wants to propose that as an interim measure, the inspecting judge for prisons be given the role of keeping an eye on all detainees, not just prisoners, but all detainees there for those in police cells as well. It seems a very good interim stopgap idea, and I really just bring it to your attention. And perhaps, Chairman, if we could, Advocate Bassett has already nodded agreement. There is such a bill somewhere in the pipeline, right? But perhaps if you want to give us an idea of what you think of Mr. Self's idea of chat, both you and...
Are you able to respond?
Chair, I'd rather to take it back to the person that's dealing with it. And what I can say that there is a bill that we are in the process of preparing. According to our legislative program, I'm just having a look quickly. We are hoping to submit it to Parliament during the second half of the year, so we are really in the beginning phases of developing a piece of legislation. So,
we're listening to next year, maybe.
So yeah, I think it'll see Parliament towards the end.
To the Chair, this issue was picking up in the Police Committee when I was still on there when we were dealing with the ICT legislation, and perhaps if you can just co-reference with the new IPED bill as well, because there was problems there with the definition of torture and that there wasn't a definition there.
Okay.
All right, if there's nothing else on the protection of personal information, that essentially concludes our business for the day. Now, tomorrow, the Director General requested an opportunity to address the committee on the department's revised key performance areas. That's a bit of a mouthful for curious. Any of you understand what that means? I know that the animals tolerate us.
Yes, they just
want
to change what they're supposed to do because I
wasn't getting anywhere in the Okay, fine. I mean, good company then.
Mr. Jeffrey? Can we get in preparation today at least the KPIs that were originally done?
Sorry, I didn't hear
the KPIs that were originally done.
That were originally
I mean, there were KPIs that were set. I mean, that we've had in the budget process before. I think we complained and the department agreed that there were too many of them. But this is not reinventing the wheel. Let's see what was there, and then the input should be on the basis of what's being changed. And why.
Yes, I agree. That would help us.
That's
Christine will also assist, and her team. Right.
Can I just ask your assistance? You referred a minute ago now to the ad hoc committee. Now, I received a telephone notice that there's one tomorrow. That
yes.
Presumably is a case where you are going to stay.
No.
But
I've done that.
You know?
Yeah. I've said no.
Yeah, but we can't just be absent. We have fundamental objections. We want to know under what rule this is being done whatsoever. We consider ourselves punctus, as you know. And so, there are difficulties. But if you persist in holding that meeting tomorrow, then I'm afraid I must go there, at least to fight, and the same applies as this one. So we may not be here, certainly so beginning at
all.
Right.
Honourable Schaefer will be here.
Yes. We will have the able presence.
You want to say something?
No.
Honourable members, my thanks and appreciation to Mr. Rudman and his team, as well as to all of you for bringing me up to speed. That was the real reason for to bring me up to speed and so that at least as he and with all of them are where we stand with these things. So tomorrow in M314 at 9 we'll listen to the Director General, and by which time you will have received the original KPI. Thank you very much. Very
generous.
I'll just have to see how much I got.